years, I have celebrated the changing of the seasons, what we call the turning of the wheel of the year, with the same circle of women. We gather to celebrate the shifting dance of sunlight and darkness, the cycles of life and death and rebirth that mark the changing of the seasons, and to explore how those cycles relate to the dance of light and darkness in our own hearts and minds, and to the cycles of life and death and rebirth that we experience on our individual life journeys. We begin each of our rituals by calling the directions and invoking the traditional elements, earth, air, fire, and water. Many different cultures have identified earth, air, fire, and water as the essential constituents of material reality. And many different cultures in many places and times have ascribed spiritual significance to these elements. Despite cultural variations, the similarities are striking. Earth represents matter, the body, literal groundedness. Earth, therefore, is associated with manifestation, stability, and security. By invoking the power of earth, we remind ourselves that we are all rooted beings, dependent on the earth for sustenance, and we remind ourselves that we need to fully inhabit and accept our bodies, celebrate our physical selves in order to be whole. Air represents intellect. It's associated with insight, clarity of vision and goals, cleansing and purification, and new beginnings. By invoking the power of air, we invite the crackling electricity of ideas, the wind that blows away the cobwebs and the mental clutter to make way for new understanding. Fire represents the life force, physical energy, what some traditions call chi or ki, and passion of all kinds. It's associated with creativity, healing, and transformation. By invoking this element, we seek to kindle the power that we each possess to transform our own lives and ourselves. And finally, water represents emotion and intuition. It's associated with depths of psyche and of spirit. And just as raindrops join into streams to feed the rivers that flow to the ocean, water reminds us of our essential connectedness to each other and to the source of life. By invoking the power of water, we honor our interdependence and the wisdom of our individual and collective unconsciouses. Now, there are times when I meditate on one or the other of these elements, deeply exploring its particular attributes and reflecting on the lessons and gifts that it might offer me. This doesn't require any esoteric knowledge about underlying symbol systems. I don't particularly care what other people have thought the element means. I know, just as you know, the feeling of soil in your hands, the smell of that soil. I know what it means to lie in the grass beneath a tree and feel the planet spinning beneath me. I know what it means to me, which is what matters. I know what it is for me to gaze into a flame, to feel the wind against my skin, to let water flow over me. Symbols have the meanings we give them. The wisdom I care about doesn't come from sages and teachers, but from my own experience and my own ideas and insights about the significance of these elements to me. That's the lesson I seek. Earth, air, fire, and water give me a never-ending opportunity to create meaning as I connect my own internal processes to the processes I observe in the natural world. And so sometimes I reflect on the attributes of a single element, and sometimes I focus on the ways that the elements depend on and balance each other. Fire needs air to burn, after all, and it needs earth and water to limit it, or it becomes destructive. On the other hand, some destruction is necessary. Earth needs fire. Think of the redwoods that require fire to propagate. Think about whatever in your own life needs to be burned away to make room for new growth. Balance between earth, air, fire, and water makes a healthy ecosystem. Balance between body, mind, will, and emotion makes a healthy person. And I know I need that balance of the elements in my own life because they swing out of whack every day. For example, my own personal temperament is very heavy on fire and air qualities. I am willful and intense, that's the fire, and highly intellectual, that's the air. Anyone here who knows me, I think, would agree that I predominate that way. And I think that's why I am so powerfully drawn to earth and to water, both literally and metaphorically. I am drawn to the mountains, to the rivers and the ocean, to the redwoods, to the soil, because I need that balancing. And this is a very practical matter for me. In my personal life, I have struggled with a lifelong tendency to intellectually override my intuition. I think I'm probably not the only person in the room who has experienced this. And I, for one, have paid dearly for misusing my intellect to discredit my own feelings and deny my gut knowledge. Now, this is an issue that I can and do work through in many contexts, including for me, 12-step recovery and psychotherapy. But what's been really key for me, because these elemental symbols hold such power, is to recognize that by giving my rational mind too much power over my emotions, I'm allowing air to dominate over water. I'm giving air too much weight and not trusting my subterranean streams of knowing. I can't rely entirely on my analytical mind to solve a problem that's about my analytical mind having too much power. So talk therapy's great, but what I need are earth-based spiritual practices to get me to healing. So I deliberately meditate on earth and water, on flow, on groundedness. I walk in silence among the trees. I enter dark, cool, quiet places. And I choose spiritual practices that are devotional rather than ones I can understand with my head. When I deliberately balance myself this way, over time, my anxiety recedes as I become more grounded in my body. My heart opens. I find myself making progress in therapy, and I begin to heal. So balance is crucial. But balance, I think, also isn't quite enough. It doesn't get me all the way where I want to be, because the whole idea of balance sort of implies two distinct things, opposites, like mind and heart, or body and spirit, having equal weight. But if we're thinking of it that way, there's still two separate things on opposite ends of the scale. Now, as modern people who understand the periodic table, or who at least remember vaguely having heard about it in school, we know that earth, air, fire, and water aren't distinct essential elements at all in the scientific sense. They're not even comprised of completely separate and distinct elements. Recall what I said before about hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon. In fact, earth, air, fire, and water aren't really substances. Earth, air, and water, after all, represent different states of matter, solid, gas, and liquid, not different substances. And fire is a process of state change. So you could say the traditional elements are actually transformed versions of each other. And isn't that great? You throw a little elementary school science into this symbol system, and you get even better metaphors. Mind and body, that's air and earth. Head and heart, air and water. Reason and passion, air and fire, aren't opposing forces. After all, they are part of each other, literally part of each other. Just as we're all part of the same star stuff as each other, and as of every person and plant and animal and stone, just like the earth, the air, the fire, and the water. Talk about an interdependent web. And these connections are represented in yet another symbol that is dear to us, our UU Flaming Chalice. Last spring, Roger preached a sermon in which he talked about the origins of the flaming chalice as a symbol of Unitarian Universalism. It was originally a secret sign for Unitarian efforts to rescue European victims of Nazi and fascist persecution. It went on to become the official symbol of our Unitarian Universalist Association. And this congregation's flaming chalice here is particularly beautiful. If you've never seen it up close, please come up after the service and take a good look. The chalice is made of bronze, metal from deep in the earth, and it takes the shape of a tree. It's on a wooden pedestal with three legs. I think of those as the roots. And then the bronze comes up as the trunk of the tree, which is also the stem of the chalice, and it branches out into roots and branches, and leaves that are holding the cup. A cup that holds not water, but fire. Ever since discovering Unitarian Universalism, I have found symbolic meaning in the flaming chalice image, which is independent of the symbol's origin story. The chalice itself has a long history as a symbol for the divine feminine, and as a cup, it suggests water, and therefore emotion and intuition. Because a cup gathers individual drops of water together, it also represents community. In our culture, a flame commonly represents reason, the light of truth. The single flame suggests the individual. And we UUs speak often of the light of individual reason, of the divine spark in each of us. So for me, the image of a chalice holding a flame speaks of the equal valuing of the individual, that flame, cupped in community. Equal respect for the worth of the individual and the acknowledgement of human dependence, the integration of head and heart. And how beautifully those metaphors support the historical origins of the flaming chalice as a symbol of our faith. The flaming chalice was originally a sign of solidarity, hope, and commitment to freedom and justice in the face of oppression and terror. It's my belief that we can't effectively transform the world with our care, serve freedom and justice as our faith calls us to do, unless we are consciously, equally valuing the individual and the community, equally honoring head and heart. One more point about the chalice. See how it's got those two circles that are distinct and overlapping? The dual circles were deliberately chosen by the UUA to represent the dual sources of our heritage, Unitarian and Universalist. In that order. But the order has no significance. It could easily have been Universalist Unitarian. The two denominations merged in 1960, becoming a single association of congregations, but instead of having a single merged circle, we have two to remind us to remember and honor each of those two traditions. Now, to vastly oversimplify our religious heritage, I think it is safe to say that the Unitarians were big on reason in religion, and they gave us our cerebral bent, while the Universalists were all about God's love, giving us the heart of our faith. Head and heart, again, symbolically united. I began by asking whether it's possible to be both brilliantly blazing and deeply rooted. The song Spirit of Life, which we love to sing together, expresses our deep yearning for both experiences. Roots hold me close, wings set me free. Spirit of Life, come to me. Concrete groundedness and limitless freedom, roots and wings, earth and air, are equally necessary for us to experience oneness with the spirit of life and with each other. I know I need both. Just as I need the active engagement of my head and my intuition with each other as I face my life's daily challenges, and just as I need both my critical mind and my devotional heart to create a meaningful religious life for myself. That, by the way, is something I can't do alone. I come here to be in community with you to find spiritual depth and faith-based action. Because your minds and your hearts and your hands ready to join with me in tending to the world are what fills this cup that holds this flame. Blessed be.